Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Squiggly Career Podcast from Amazing If. I'm Sarah, and I'm joined by my co-host, Helen.
Hello, everyone.
Did you like the way I called you a co-host then?
Yeah, I think
that was the first time we've used that.
Co-founder, friend, I'll take all of those.
I know, but I feel like now that co-host is a bit more of like a radio DJ sort of phrase.
Lifelong aspiration.
Exactly. Thank you everyone for joining us this week. If you are new to the podcast, the purpose of this podcast is to help everyone to develop the skills that we all need to succeed in our increasingly squiggly careers. Helen, how's your week been so far? We're actually recording this in the morning, which is quite unusual because we tend to do them in an evening. So how's your squiggly week going so far?
It's okay. I'm back from holiday this week, so it's a bit of a shorter week for me. It's flown by. A podcast in the morning. I feel like I'm an early bird, so I've got quite a lot of energy. I have to make sure I don't talk too fast because that's normally what happens when I've got too much energy. But yeah, I'm fueled. I've had two coffees. Been up since five, it's all good. Happy.
So we are going to get a frantic and efficient podcast in the next 30 minutes. We were laughing this morning because we're both working at home this morning to record the podcast, though my little boy, who's about a year old, isn't very well. So if you do hear random screams in the background, I've not left him feral around the house. He has actually got someone looking after him. But if you hear the odd cry, like, no one panic, he's being well looked after, brackets probably. And if there's a really dramatic scenario, you'll hear me disappear. But my week has been particularly squiggly because of that, when you're kind of halfway through a meeting and you get the phone call, oh yeah, you know, you need to come pick him up from nursery. And you're like, right. And desperately trying to work out how you're going to make that work. And I think our attitude to working from home is probably slightly different, given we record this so we can also see each other. And I think it was quite a dramatic difference, I guess, in our approach to working from home, in that I'm sitting here having prioritised having a coffee over having a shower. And Helen is sitting in her house looking very glamorous with makeup on, her hair curled, literally looking like she could walk into a business meeting. I've got shorts and a t-shirt on and don't have quite the same glamour about me.
I find this funny though, but people, like, they're working from home. I know, but a lot of people like to work from home because they don't, like, they can just wear their pyjamas basically and work from home. But I like to get ready just as if I was going to an office or a meeting, because it, like, gets my mindset ready.
You know,
I like to follow a routine. I kind of quite like following the same routine in the morning, getting up at the same time, all that kind of jazz. So I've already had two coffees. I just get myself ready and then I feel like worky ready. I've journaled this morning. I've been efficient.
if it's reassuring to people who maybe don't like mornings quite so much, which is definitely me, I still had to get up at 5:30 because of having a 1-year-old. But yeah, I basically slouched around with him, watched Teletubbies for a bit, went and got myself a coffee, ate a cinnamon whirl, and that's it. That's all I've done this morning.
I love that you're watching Teletubbies. How time changed.
I actually don't love that bit, but if the minute I walk out the room, he starts crying. So essentially, you have no choice other than to watch this very green, very weird world. So this week, what we're talking about, introversion and extroversion and the difference between being an introvert and extrovert. And I think this is a fascinating topic and one that's being talked about, I think, much more over the past sort of 3 or 4 years. And in the context of a squiggly career, kind of why is this important? Well, I think not only is introversion and extroversion important, I think generally having high levels of self-awareness in terms of your style, how you like to work, how you can make sure that you do your best work, becomes increasingly important as everything gets squigglier, because you need to have confidence in yourself and making the right decisions for you to work out, when will I be at my happiest? how do I like to work? How can I be most productive and effective? Even Helen and I describing our morning routines there, they could not be more different. But there's no right or wrong. I mean, Helen's might sound more right. I appreciate, you know, she's sitting there sounding very professional. But if actually you ease your way into a day and you're really effective in the evening, or you like to recharge in a very kind of different way, and, you know, you like to work by yourself versus liking working in teams, this is not really about right, wrong, or one thing is better than another. I think it's about understanding yourself, how to make sure that you can use all the things you're brilliant at as much of the time as you can. And the second part that I think is always really helpful with this kind of understanding profiling point is it's really powerful to understand other people. Because I think once you've got to a certain point for yourself, now a lot of the time I find the value in lots of the content we're going to talk about today is actually understanding other people, why they might behave as they are behaving, how can I build more effective relationships, which again, in this squiggly career, I think we're all going to have to get loads better at building the right relationships to support our careers.
I totally agree. And I think in terms of introversion and extroversion, I feel like we've talked about it for such a long time. Sarah and I went to uni together, and I think we first did Myers-Briggs, which is one of the more common tests, though it's got its critiques, but one of the more common tests for whether you're on where you sit on an introversion extroversion scale. And I feel like we've been talking about it for quite a long time, but in order to prep for this podcast, I was doing a bit of research and I learned quite a lot of new information actually about it, and a new term which I'll kind of talk about in a second. But one of the big things that stuck with me when I was doing the research about introversion and extroversion was that there's actually this like really big myth that exists that introverts are basically quiet people and extroverts are really loud people, and that's it. It's that simple. And if you're a loud person, you're an extrovert, and end of. And that's the box that you've been put in. But when I was looking at the research, and Susan Cain is someone who's done a lot of research on this, and a big TED talk, we'll give you all the resources for that later on. But what it actually means is it's about how you respond to and process stimuli. And so if we, you know, put it really simply, introverts, they get their energy from solitude. So they are actually, in their minds are sort of more sensitive to stimulus. So they don't need as much of it, if you like, to get their fill. Whereas extroverts, they're not so sensitive to stimulus. So they seek more of it. So it's a biological explanation to it. But it's really about what stimulates your brain. And if you're an introvert, you just need less stimulus. You don't need to meet as many people. You don't need to engage with many people because your brain doesn't need it as much. Whereas extroverts almost just have a bigger need because of how they're wired. And when I was looking at the research, because I was trying to think, what's the simplest way of you listening on the podcast, the simplest way of you getting a feel for maybe where you sit on this introversion extroversion scale, the simplest thing I found was from Susan Cain, and it was this question about where does your energy come from, and in that are clues to where you might sit on the scale. We'll give you some other tests so you can get a bit more accurate, but I thought that was such an interesting question that maybe Sarah and I, we've not prepped for this, but Sarah and I could maybe ask each other that and see whether it gives us any clues. So Sarah, where do you get your energy from?
I think that's a really good question, because I often think about both energy and recovery, you know, and we actually talked about this, didn't we, a bit last week in the work well-being podcast around, and so I think those two things are linked. So I think I usually get the most energy from spending time with one other person. So that doesn't necessarily have to be like a meeting, but spending time with somebody else who often has, I often get the most energy actually from spending time with people who are relatively extrovert, or people who I imagine would be an extrovert. And that's kind of me making some assumptions, but people who I can share ideas with, whether they're fully formed ideas, initial thoughts or musings, and people who can challenge me, ask me questions. We can sort of, I feel like we're sort of building something together. But then actually after those kind of almost like quite high energy moments, I then have a real sense of also wanting to be by myself to then reflect and kind of work out what I think. I really like walking by myself, actually. I try to, wherever I can, walk to work and walk back from work to at least a station by myself. And that's quite a long walk. But I do that because I find that that helps me to recover after kind of having those high energy moments. So if I was to kind of pick moments, I think it's one-to-one situations. And there's something about I'm creating something with someone else. And that's often when I feel most energetic.
Oh, I think mine, in terms of where I get my energy from, I think mine would be one to many. So I think that's different. I love a team environment, providing it's like a high energy, positive team. So where there's
a bit of banter, you're creating, you're up on a whiteboard. Do you know, even talking about that makes me feel like quite excited, the thought I could be like doing that in a room with a team. That gives me loads of energy. One-to-ones, not so much. Sometimes I find one-to-ones draining, actually, because it's quite intense for me, whereas I find that kind of group environment a bit more exciting. But I still do need time on my own. Like, I love a day where I can, and I will work, like, I will start at like 6 in my office and I'll finish at 7 and I'll just work. I don't even have to leave the room. So something that really irritates Sarah, which is like, Helen, we need to get some space. But I can work very intensely on something, and I need to do that. If I don't do that for a while, I feel like I haven't thought enough or I haven't produced something. So I feel like that's maybe my recovery thing. But I'd say 80% of my week, I can do that group environment, that buzzy thing, that I really need that. But then that recovery is probably 20% of my week. I need to have just some time when I'm not talking to anybody and I'm just head down thinking, creating, like, you know, producing my thoughts.
And is it worth sharing, I guess, when we've both done, so Myers-Briggs, as Helen talked about, is the most commonly used profiling tool, I would say. And we'll give you the resources at the end of the podcast, because there's actually a way of doing that now for free. So you can all go away and work out what your kind of personality profile is. When we both do those profiles, Helen, what do you come out as? And has it changed over time, or has it stayed the same?
So mine is, and I don't know how much this will mean to everybody, but mine is an ENTJ, and I won't go through what all the acronyms mean, but the profile, Sarah's funny, Sarah and I were kind of messaging each other last night about this, and what does it call, I think you were looking at that, it was called Commander, was like the profile, and they're natural born leaders, they've got charisma, confidence, they project authority, but they've got a ruthless level of rationality, and they can use their drive, determination and sharp mind to achieve whatever they've set themselves, almost like regardless of the cost. So I think that's the summary of what my profile means. And
you sound absolutely terrifying.
But I don't think I'm quite all of that, which is why, you know, sometimes these profile tools, they really do put you in a box sometimes. But
yeah.
I can see some of myself in that. And Sarah and I, like, we were messaging each other and I was like, am I ruthlessly rational? And we were like, no, but you can be a bit ruthlessly efficient. So there's definitely some truth in that profile for me. And your question of has it stayed true? Again, we did this at university, which is about 18 years ago. I was an ENTJ then, and I've done it other times in my careers, and I've always been an ENTJ. So I think there is some consistency. Equally, that's me scoring myself, so you've always got to be a bit aware of you scoring yourself versus other people scoring you, but I consistently see myself as an ENTJ based on the surveys that I've done. What about you?
So when I first did, I've done these profiles probably 3 or 4 times, and if you're listening and thinking, I don't like the idea of answering some questions and that telling me who I am as a person, that's absolutely not what you should be using these for. I just think they're one useful data point, essentially, to help you think through, you know, who you are and kind of what's important to you. So please don't feel like this kind of will give you all of the answers. Though it is interesting how when people do it, and I've sort of mentioned it to friends and stuff, people actually really love it. They find it, everyone quite likes a kind of quiz, don't they, essentially? and when I do, so when I've done mine has changed. So I think in certainly probably the first at least 6 or 7 years of my career, I felt like I needed to be an extrovert to be successful. And I associated those two things together, that the people that I knew that were successful, the role models that I saw, and the things that I read sort of implied to me, either explicitly or implicitly, that actually it was really important to be an extrovert. That's how you progressed. That's what success looked like. So when I used to do my Myers-Briggs profiles, I always came out, as an ENTJ, exactly the same as Helen. And as people who've been listening to podcasts for a while probably start to appreciate, there is absolutely no way that I'm an ENTJ. I was essentially, gaming the system to make sure that I got the result that I wanted to. Now, you know, in some ways I go, I'm quite impressed that I was smart enough to be able to work that out, to be honest. But it does just show you can either fill these in honestly, or you can just fill them in and kind of think, well, I think at the time I was filling it in for the person that I would like to be rather than the person that I was. And then over time, as I think I became more confident and comfortable in myself, my profile actually shifted relatively radically. And I'm now what's called an INFJ. And that's been very consistent. And the biggest shift there is the I, which is introvert. And I think when I started to really understand what it meant to be an introvert, and that it wasn't a bad thing, and that it was okay, and that it wasn't going to detrimentally impact all the things I wanted to do, I started to embrace it a bit more and became A, much happier, but also more aware about why I found some situations really difficult. Because one of the things it sort of talks about with kind of introverts is often you do find very big social situations either quite intimidating or you get quite nervous. And one of the in the profile descriptions it says is like, you will never choose to socialize, which sounds awful, but I was like, there's definitely quite a lot of that in me. I'm really happy to spend time with people for a specific purpose. It was like, when it's quite, if it's very work focused, I'll think, oh yeah, that'll be useful because I want to learn about that thing. But if it was just, oh, let's all get together and have a drink, I would just think, oh, I'd rather read a book. Thanks.
I've got uni flashbacks of where that was definitely very true.
Yeah, I mean, how many people in our university degree do you think were an extrovert? Out of like the 26 of us, 25? Do you think I was like the only one?
Yeah, it was quite a few.
So that was fun. That was a fun time for me.
Sorry.
Mine is, so Helen talked about hers being a commander. Mine is called an advocate, which means that you have an inborn sense of idealism and morality. And what apparently sets me apart is that I'm not an idle dreamer, but a person capable of taking concrete steps to realise their goals and make a long-lasting positive impact. So
I think yours sounds a lot nicer.
Basically, I'm probably going to save the world. I think that's my conclusion from that.
And I'm going to help you make it happen with drive and determination and ruthless
Excellent.
Practicality or whatever it was.
So between us, we'll get there.
So the other thing when I was researching that I came across, which I found really interesting, because I think we've talked about, you know, majority of time you like one-to-one, I like one-to-many, but we both have this thing where we like some time on our own to recover. And there was a concept that I came across in the research called ambivert, which I think is quite a new thing. I don't know how new it is, but I hadn't really come across it much. I don't think a huge amount of work's been done on it. But an academic, I suppose, and an author and a presenter that we both like called Adam Grant, also has a great podcast, by the way. He's at Wharton, and he's done some research that says actually 2/3 of people don't identify strongly as an introvert or an extrovert. They sit somewhere in the middle, and this somewhere in the middle point is an ambivert. And they have both got introverted and extroverted tendencies, but it depends on the situation as to which way they lean. And I actually am quite interested in it. I do wonder if there are not that many studies to identify yourself as an ambivert, but I do wonder where you and I might sit on that. And, you know, given 2/3 of people listening to this podcast are probably an ambivert, your point earlier about why do you want to care about this in a squiggly career, it's not to put yourself in a box and go, I'm an ENTJ for life. It is to understand your preferences, and particularly I think when those preferences are triggered and when they might serve you and when they might not serve you. And what we wanted to do in the podcast today is talk about some situations that are likely to trigger your introvert or extrovert sort of preference, and just think about where that might work for you or against you, and share our experiences, because I think that's the big takeaway from here, is just the awareness and ability to do something about it in a situation. So shall we dive into those situations, Sarah, when they can help or hinder you, and then maybe after that we can kind of give you some pointers and some resources for how you can find out what your preference is?
Yep, let's go.
Okay, so the first situation then that we think when it really counts what your kind of preference is building relationships, because, it, you know, these preferences can serve you or not serve you in the context of building relationships. So maybe, Sarah, if you kick off with when you're sort of potentially you're an ambivert, but your slightly higher introvert preference has worked for you and against you maybe in building relationships.
Yeah, so I think building relationships for me, I would regard as one of my strengths. And I feel that my introvert tendencies mean that I can build very strong, long-lasting, deep relationships, but probably not with loads of people. I like to kind of get to know people at more than just a kind of superficial or transactional level. And what I then find is that I take people with me. So in terms of squiggly careers, and we talk about you might be doing multiple things simultaneously, or you might change jobs more often, I'm still, you know, last week I saw, you know, the lady that I worked for at Barclays probably now nearly sort of 10 years ago. And so she's somebody who I had a brilliant relationship with then, who was, you know, very much mentored me and supported me. And 10 years on, I still know her, I spend time with her, and I can imagine I'll be doing exactly the same in 10 years' time. And so I think building those relationships in a kind of authentic way to me, I very much focus on, you know, for me, building relationships starts with thinking about what you can give and not what you can gain, which is one of the things that we talk about in kind of the networking podcast. And that approach has served me really well. It means that I've got a massive network, but a network of people who I know are very supportive of me and will definitely help me in my career. But also I feel like I've been able to reciprocate over time. And I find now that actually, because I've done that successfully, often people recommend meeting me to other people. So it's kind of a really nice self-fulfilling cycle of someone will get in touch with me, a slightly kind of random connection, but say, oh, you might remember me from this point, or I know someone that you know. Yeah, I wondered if you could help me with this, or I've got something that might be useful to you. Actually, on the point of university, this week, somebody from our university degree had the podcast recommended to them. And she's someone who I've probably seen once since university because we happen to work in the same area. And she sent me a message on LinkedIn just saying, oh, I had your podcast recommended. So I've listened to you and Helen. Obviously, she knows you as well. Oh, and she obviously enjoyed it and had recommended it to a few other people. And then we're going to get a coffee. And so those are the sorts of kind of relationships. That's often how I start to build my relationships. So that's where it works for me. Where it kind of works against me is so the first thing is I get nervous meeting new people always. It doesn't matter what context that's in. I'm always more comfortable once I've had kind of a first meeting with someone. And when I'm nervous, I actually get overly enthusiastic. That's my way of essentially compensating. Overly enthusiastic and probably stop listening with the same kind of meaning that I would do usually. I've become very aware of that and try to relax into meeting someone for the first time a bit more and not get a bit too kind of frantic, which is basically my coping mechanism. So that's one way it doesn't work as well for me, but I've kind of learned to get better. The other is definitely big social situations. And even now for work, where sometimes I have to go to big events where there's maybe hundreds of people, just the scale of those, and you know that a lot of people have it, but that nervousness of walking into a room where you think I'm by myself and I don't know anyone, I absolutely hate that. I with a passion, I hate it that much. I find it so, it makes me really anxious. And really, I suppose I don't think there's any way of me thinking I'm suddenly going to enjoy that. What I just find is that, and I think I'm sure we've talked about it before, if I'm going to be in that kind of situation, if it's genuinely something I'm very nervous about, I will think about, is there someone I could take with me? Is there a way of kind of reducing that anxiety? Or I sometimes just have to talk to myself in my head and go, okay, you're going to hate the first 5 minutes. Go over, just get a drink, say hello to someone. No one is not going to say hello back. And I just, it's almost dealing with the, like, you know, you go to an event and there's like networking drinks or something for half an hour before.
Yeah, love it.
I would turn up, in my ideal world, I would turn up 1 minute before the actual thing starts. and I know that about myself, and it's not great. I think that kind of the ability to socialise in a more informal way is really important. And I do recognise that, but I have to work really hard to make myself do it.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's so funny because my flip side of preference and taking that event example, I actually much prefer that networking bit when you're standing up and you've got a glass in your hand and you're chatting.
No.
I much prefer that to when you're sat down at a table. As soon as I'm sat down at a table and I just have to talk to one or two people, I'm a bit like, this isn't exciting.
I love the table bit. I cannot wait. You know when events start late, I'm like, I just want to go and sit down and talk to someone.
I really wish that they rotated tables or rotated seats. I'm a bit like,
God.
I know this is a very real difference, I think, because I just want to meet and talk to as many people as possible and get excited, and potentially I might get bored of the conversation quite quickly. And so I feel like when I'm sat there, I just kind of want to move around a little bit. Whereas obviously for you, that's great. You can have a deeper, richer conversation. Whereas for me, I kind of want to be excited. It's that stimulus thing again. Like I get the more interactions I have, the more stimulated I am. And I think I need quite a lot of it or I get bored. So I think the positive for me in the context of, and then that was talking about an event, but just generally in terms of building relationships, let's say it's a meeting at work or it's meeting my new team, or, you know, yesterday I met my new manager, for example. I have no fear. There's very few people that I have a fear about meeting. I occasionally seniority might bring it in, but that's more because I'm like, oh, my career's, I've got to make a good impression. But generally, I don't really have a lot of fear about who I'm meeting, and whether that's a senior person or it's a large group of 100 people or whatever it is, I embrace it. And the benefit of that is that I sometimes get random opportunities because I meet lots of different people and I can connect them and I just get excited by it. The challenge is I think it can scare people off. So being in building relationships, my extrovert tendencies, particularly managing teams, actually might alienate some people. I'm aware of it. I don't think I've always fully got a hold of it, but I think it can sometimes make me lean towards people who are more like me, people who are positive and energetic and want to work in that same way. And sometimes I think people who are introverted, I have to work extra hard to bring those people in because they don't give me the energy and stimulus as much as maybe other extroverts do. So I'm aware of it, but as a manager, it's definitely a challenge for me.
Yeah, and I think that is a key point in terms of once you understand the positives and the areas where it might hold you back, then I think it's up to you to take ownership for being flexible, being adaptable. So I don't think, so, and I have heard people do this before, I don't think profiles can then be used as an excuse.
Yeah,
and
agree.
I actually made my, this doesn't sound fun, but it was actually quite funny. I had my boyfriend and my sister and a couple of people around, and I was talking about it for some reason, and they were all like, right, we want to do this. It sounds like a quiz. All did their 16 personalities profile. And then actually, honestly, my boyfriend has started to use it as a bit of an excuse. Oh, well, I need that because I'm a logistician. And I'm like, no. You can't just tell me that you want to do something in a certain way just because of some profile thing that I've made you do. And actually, I have heard that in a work setting as well, where people will... So that would be like me saying to you, oh, Helen, I'm not going to go to that big event that'll be useful for Amazing If because, you know, obviously I'm an introvert, so that's going to put me under a lot of pressure. I don't think that's the answer. The answer is partly you've just understood why you find it hard. Then you could think about how you can cope better. And you still need to, at times, put yourself in those uncomfortable situations. I just think, actually, you do a better job of it. So now when I do go to big events, and I do actually have to go to quite a few, I'm just loads more comfortable with it because I know that I'll find it hard. I almost go, I accept I find it hard. I'll get through, I will make an effort to go to that half an hour before, talk to a few people, and then almost breathe a sigh of relief once I get to the table. So just make sure that you're not then using this as a reason to not do things that are important to your career. Because I think the people who get the best work out of themselves and get the best opportunities coming to them are still adaptable enough to realise where they need to kind of flex their style.
So that first situation was building relationships. The second one, when we think it really counts, is leading teams. Now I've touched on this, and I've kind of touched on the challenges of that, really, that you can, as an extrovert, I can alienate introverts because I lean into those people that give me energy. A positive, I think, of my preference of extroversion in terms of a team environment is that I can create momentum, team spirit and fun and energy. I can inject that as well as kind of taking that out. So I think that is something that's useful for me. Sarah, what about you in terms of leading teams? Where do you think it serves you or doesn't?
I think it serves me well in terms of I have high levels of empathy and I think emotional intelligence and ability to read how individuals might be feeling as part of that team. So I think I would often understand how a team dynamic is working, where there's challenges, look at and understand people's different kind of preferences and styles, and have quite a kind of thoughtful, I think, and considered perspective and approach to leading a team, where I think of everyone as an individual as well as a team. I think where it can sometimes hold me back is I'm often really good at having kind of reflections and observations and insights around teams or individuals and how people are performing. But at times I think you have to act in the moment, and because I'm naturally more, I observe and reflect, that often happens after things, you know, after a meeting or after at the end of a day. And at times you have to, I think, propel yourself to take action there and then. And I can definitely procrastinate on doing something because I'll be thinking it to the point of overthinking. And sometimes you have to take action in the moment, and that's when it's most needed and has the most impact. And sometimes that natural style can stop me doing that, and then it takes too long, and then, you know, you kind of lose the impetus and the momentum that you were talking about.
Yeah, I can see that. Again, it's aware that we are, I think, opposite there, whereas I would probably take action quite quickly sometimes without having done all the thinking that might need to be done. And I really have to stop myself. My tendency is just to run with it. What do they say, that bull in a china shop? That has been said about my approach more than once. So I have to work very hard to stop myself responding to it.
But I remember on that point, we were... entering an award for Amazing If, and the deadline was really short, and I just looked at it and thought, and I can't do this, it's too short a time, I'm not particularly kind of spontaneous, we won't be able to do a very good job. Whereas actually what you did was you were just like, oh, I'm just gonna write it, and you just wrote it really quickly, and it wasn't perfect, but then actually it did work, and it was good enough in that moment. And in that moment you just recognized, this is not the time to spend loads of time reflecting or talking about this. You've just got to do something. So it's also incredibly powerful.
We also won an award on that night. It wasn't the gold that you're quite... but we did... I know, we'll leave it. But we did get the award. So I think, I'm quite good at that 80% thing because of my kind of drive to get it done. So the last one then that we think a situation where it's really, really important is in terms of how you influence other people. I think this is where, again, it can work for you and against you. And if I look at my preference, the being an introvert in extrovert, in terms of how I work with people, that is really positive, because if I'm trying to influence someone, I'm happy to call things out. Like if I want to have a conversation about someone, I want to change a direction or have some form of maybe slightly conflicting conversation, I'm really happy to put something on the table, ask difficult questions, call it out. I've got better at this because I've sort of honed. I've matured in how I do it, but I do think my extroversion helps me because I don't have to overthink it or the implications of me doing it, and I can, once I've got my mindset of right, I'm going to do it, I'm fine to have those slightly more difficult conversations. In terms of successfully influencing people, though, I think sometimes my extroversion means that I talk more than I listen. I think it's a real downside, and I try and manage it, but it's so hard. I want to share and engage all the time, and that's part of my preference. But influencing is not all about tell all the time. You know, sometimes you have to listen and respond and softly. And I think for me, in terms of influencing, because I'm an extrovert, I always put my cards on the table. I was like, it's like the worst poker player in the world. I'm like, here's how I'm feeling, this is what we're doing, let's go do it, it'll be great. And I think actually, sometimes, again, that not having that need for speed, that approaching it
in a slightly more sophisticated way, listening, responding, which I think would be interesting to hear your perspective on it, Sarah, but I think that's all more aligned to an introvert preference about how you might approach it. I think that can be successful in influencing. I generally succeed in influencing through my energy and my drive and my passion is probably what I lean on a lot. And I think I could be more sophisticated in how I do it, but that's not natural to my kind of preference.
Yes, I think I would be slightly different because I think we both have jobs where you spend a lot of time influencing other people because that's a big part of any, I think, squiggly careers generally, actually. There's way more connecting the dots, I think, in every job that you do now, because that's, if you don't work with lots of different people or different teams, you can't ever make anything happen. There's very few things I think you can do in isolation. So I think this is something that everybody needs to kind of get good at in terms of wanting to get to an outcome, wanting to make something happen. You've got to galvanize people or teams around you. And I would say I do it in definitely with the same energy and passion and that kind of Helen talked about. I don't think that has to only be an extrovert thing. I think you can obviously have that if you're an introvert. But for me, I think where I'm often at my best is I spend time and think about what motivates and drives different people. I try to really kind of walk in their shoes in terms of thinking about, okay, well, if somebody's in this role or leading this particular team, what's going to be most important to them? And why is that really important? Is that in terms of personally important to them, professionally important? How might what I'm doing impact what they do, whether that's day to day or kind of in the long term? And then I think using that as a way to then position whatever I'm trying to do in a frame it, I guess, in a way that feels relevant to that individual. So being able to kind of take the core of whatever it is I'm doing and adapt it appropriately, I think, is essentially how I often kind of get things done. So that is more of, I think, a nuanced approach. And I've worked with some people who are very good at this, and I think I've kind of learnt from some of the best. But that's very different to, you know, you were talking about kind of motivating and driving people. You probably would get things done quicker in the way that you talked about. Equally, you might find that some people don't come with you, and you might not know that because you'd have that kind of momentum. I do think, though, the challenge in doing in the kind of the approach that I sometimes take is A, it can be time. So because I'm lots of introverts, I think, and I don't think it's particular to introverts or extroverts, but I'm also naturally very collaborative. It then means that you sort of have this sense and feeling of wanting to engage everyone before taking action. So that can just, I think, over collaboration can slow you down. And where perspectives are very different to mine, I find that really hard. So even if I've understood that somebody is motivated by something very different, if I find that it radically conflicts with my own point of view, I find it hard to influence and persuade that person because I feel like I'm in such a different starting place to them that I wonder then, I think I make some assumptions about, well, will they ever change their attitude to this project or this point of view? And so I think it's this, I often think influencing and persuading is actually a really difficult skill in terms of being brilliant at it. You know, it's often something you see lots of people who work in politics or in public affairs in that kind of arena get very good at it. There's a quote actually by Gary Hamel who talks a lot about kind of leadership. And I can't remember the exact quote, but I'll have a look for it. But it's essentially saying that when you're leading and you're in control of everything, essentially it's easier. When you're trying to lead through influencing and persuading, it's actually the hardest thing you can do. So, you know, when people don't basically have to do what you say, where you're, you know, where basically they have a choice, he reckons that's one of the, like, the hardest leadership skills there are. And I think that's definitely been my experience.
And I think I was just listening to you then, and I was thinking to myself a little bit about, if you know what your preference is, so whether you're an introvert, an extrovert or an ambivert, would you pick a different job or a different company based on that? Like, if you saw a company that you thought was more extrovert, would you not go for it if you're an introvert? Or actually, is this just about you can work anywhere, you can do any job, just, you know, look, thinking about how you are at your best in the context of when your preference serves you and doesn't serve you? And I'm quite confident it's the latter. I think this shouldn't stop you. Knowing what you are shouldn't stop you from doing any particular job or any working in any particular company. And I guess an evidence point for that, earlier we mentioned Adam Wharton and his research on ambiverts. And what he found out was that basically there's an assumption that salespeople, for example, that the best salespeople are extroverts. That's also like a commonly held assumption. But actually the best,
his research showed that the best performing salespeople were introverts. And so I think that's kind of like a reinforcer that the, in terms of taking actions from this podcast, finding out what your preference is the first action. But that doesn't mean don't go for certain jobs or don't work in certain companies that you might have assumptions about where what their kind of overall culture is based on that sort of preference. It does mean that think about how you do the job you can you do to the best of your ability with that awareness.
Yeah, and that comes down to context again, doesn't it? I think absolutely. Context is so important, almost like the situation you find yourself in. Because what I would say is if you're in an organisation that is dominated by a certain style, and that's the way that things have always been done, if you're going in there to do something different and to kind of take a different approach, that could be a brilliant experience, but it's understanding that that's going to feel hard because you're going to be approaching it in a different way to the way that they're used to. And so I think then that's where, if you are going into a new role or a new kind of situation or different team, understanding as much as you can about that context before you start means that you'll be better placed to understand how kind of your own profile is likely to fit in that context, how much you feel you'll have to adapt, and why you might find certain things harder than others.
I think that is our action. So kind of in summary for this week, those are the three actions there. So work out where you are and what situations trigger your default mode. Go through that process that Sarah and I have been through about when it's serving you and when it's not serving you, and think that through, because then you can take more control over it. And then you can then adapt your approach accordingly. So it's just that kind of awareness, response approach that we're trying to get you to. Yeah. So there are actions. And to help you, we're going to give you a couple of resources. So the first one
is... couple? You've got a list of about 10 here.
Well, you know, we're not going to go through all these people. So the first thing I'm going to do, because in doing the research, I found so much stuff and that I've got a really quick... quiz for you as well that you can do to work out whether you're an introvert and extrovert. I've got links that you can do full tests on like 16 personalities. What I'm going to do is write a blog post on this, because I think there's so much in here and it'll be the most easy way for you listeners to like take action from some of the stuff that we've researched. So I will write a blog post that will be up when this podcast goes live. So if you go to www.amazingif and then you go to our blog posts, the most recent blog post will be on introversion and extroversion, and it will have some quick questions and it will have some links, which will include a book link to Quiet the Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. That's by Susan Cain, and she's also done a brilliant TED talk that we will link to, and we'll also put some of those tests on, and we'll put the link to the Adam Wharton research about ambiverts as well. So it's the easiest way so that you can all take action on this, I think. So next week, Sarah, what are we covering next week?
So next week we're going to talk about how to do a great interview. We've all been there, whether it's an internal interview or an external interview. It's that kind of very pressured, you've got 45 minutes or an hour, sometimes even less, to impress. Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, how do you kind of make the most impact when you're interviewing with someone for the first time? So we'll talk all about that. If you've got any particular interview questions or questions about being interviewed that you want us to address, let us know. Please do get in touch. Instagram, LinkedIn, email us at getintouch@amazingif.com. We really love hearing from everyone. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do subscribe, give us a rating, share it with people. It really helps us, and it means that we can keep doing these every week, which we both enjoy, and hopefully everyone's getting lots of value from them. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you.
Speak to you next week. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.